Hi, and welcome to the first part of the Ungagged podcast for March 19. We have three contributors in this part. First one is Deborah Torrance, and to quote from her, Jacob Rees-Mogg's penis jokes and the impending Brexit apocalypse. Is nuclear annihilation better than Brexit? At least it's nice and sunny. We have a willy under a Snapchat filter. We also have Graham Campbell on Brexit, Glasgow City Council budget and restorative justice for slavery. And Ulla from Ulla's Cool Kitchen fortunately ventures into politics for us, away from our usual music, and discusses Brexit and Trump. And we have music from Cascadia with Tide to the Moon, Demagogue from Franz Ferdinand, and starting with this from Voxen, Crystal Eyes.
The first thing I remember is fire. Light burns unending. A nightmare haunting earthly desire. Dark hearts calling. Illusion shrouded mystical signs. Black shards taunting. It's poison, danger seeping inside. Smoke clouds ascending.
Crystal eyes. Mi amo Deborah Torrens. J'habite en Mulgay. Tout l'amour you. My Spanish, French and Italian isn't very good, but neither is my English. I get a shot. I'm so gutted, man. I was just on a family holiday recently, surrounded by other European holidaymakers, and I just can't believe we are leaving the EU. I mean, I've accepted it. Britain is full of angry fishermen who want lines drawn on the sea and guys on the street who voted leave for no more Muslims. You know, rational minds. I respect the result of England and Wales dominating the rest of the UK. That's just how it goes. But I'm in just a sort of disbelief. I've also got a bit of a sore throat, so forgive me. A woman sneezed on me at the airport, so hopefully it's some sort of 12 Monkeys situation where I can come back in time as Bruce Willis sneak spiders or something. I mean, anything's got to be better than reality right now, right? Let's review the current situation and the people leading the UK government right now. We have the Prime Minister, Theresa May, model Big Bead on PMQ pool cue mode, programmed to terminate at the end of Brexit into a red, white and blue confetti bomb, where Boris Johnson ziplines down for Big Ben, revealing a new facelift behind a massive Union Jack flag, which is now just an engraved replica of Jacob Rees-Mogg's penis. A big, erect, square bod phallus with a big bell on the top. I mean, as a country, and I can't believe I'm saying this, as Britain, what the fuck are we doing? I identify as Scottish. On holiday, I was repeatedly asked where I was from. I always think it's pretty obvious, but I always reply Scottish anyway. Not out of some sort of unicornist patriotism, but as a kind of forewarning, like, you may not understand me or my 500 mile an hour speaking girlfriend, who when she joked to a German guy, I'll batter you, I could see his complex and deep confusion trying to work out what food she was talking about. Britain is distinct. I mean, regionally, we're quite distinct. We recognise each other's accents. We congregate in places. When England was playing Wales at the rugby, we found ourselves amongst Welsh and Irish families. I mean, the big guy with his England tattoo on his lower back might have just been getting some shade that day. But we all got along. We all laughed and joked with the Spaniards and Italians, Germans, Polish people. I mean, it was good spirits and joviality. The kids all played together. Everyone eating the same food, drinking together, watching shows. After we leave the EU, though, what's going to happen? Like, next time I'm on holiday, after the delays at customs, maybe losing my luggage, being interrogated before entering the country, when we're all sat by the pool, will there be resentment? Will people be looking at us like, oh, there go the leavers. They wanted out. They do not care about us. They just want to come for cheap booze and fags. They aren't like us. I don't know why that last one went a bit Transylvanian there, sorry. Will we become the new Americans in Europe? That's a wee joke there for my pal History Twins. She sometimes does comics for us. But I shouldn't slag the Americans though, really. It's no like they're only having a rough time of it. Their president is so stupid. His team placates his idiocy by changing the use of legal terms to fit his tiny Satsuma brain's capacity. A memorandum of understanding, so to speak. Absolute narcissistic, gum-bashing, shovel-faced, scrotum-necked, megalomaniac, bricklaying bastard. He wants to build a wall to keep people out of his beloved country, protect the border, stop border crossings, caravans. You know who else talks about borders and crossings and caravans, but made of a travelling community variety caravan? Tory politicians. The Tories who are leading my country by default, the United fucking Kingdom of Great Ha 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 Britain and Northern Ireland. I'm going to chuck it up with the bad accents now. That was meant to be Northern Ireland, not Arlene. Whenever I say Arlene, I think it comes out in a terrible accent, I'm sorry. I'm actually an eternal optimist, though. The sun will come out tomorrow, cup half full kind of gal. Even after the crushing, overwhelming, decisive defeat of 6% in the first Scottish independence referendum, after greeting and having a wee whisky, I regained my hope and chimed, "Ach well, at least we won't do that again." We had the Macron report released in full today. I thought everyone knew what the report was, but apparently not. The news of a 45-year-old document, a memo, a civil servant report on the state of Scotland and oil. I mean, you can go read it. The National published it without a paywall, so go check it out if you haven't already. But do I really care about oil reports from nearly half a century ago? We need to stop relying on oil at some point. We should be looking at the other stolen and mismanaged resources of our small nation. But then I think about Venezuela, Brazil, what's happening in Papua New Guinea. Then I think about baby turtles, and I think about plastic in the oceans, and I think about climate change. I think about Wayne's in Syrian refugee camps, Palestinian folk behind blockades. I think about human trafficking across the world. And I think about the global politicians who can stop it all. And then I look at the news. And then I want to punch myself in the throat with my crutch. Fatalistic politicking? You betcha. We have all the technology in the world. A global communications network. Even in dictator states, somebody, somewhere, can get on Snapchat for a quick dick pic. We have the means and capability to seek out the truth. We have the devices in the palms of our hands and the literacy to evoke change. We can read fragmented history specially selected for our secret Facebook groups, or we can listen to our elders. Or we can fling a bucket of water over a homeless guy in a rail station, and we can use technology to make scary as fuck videos on YouTube for wee Waynes to freak out over. Maybe it's better this way. Just to have all the info and ability to do nothing than to have none of the info and the ability to do anything. Did you see that 85-year-old American senator who didn't know how mobile phones work and told Waynes own iPads didn't understand how the skies blew? Let's hope Donald Trump doesn't understand how big red buttons work either. If the end of the world is nigh, then at least it's going to be nice weather to sit out and watch the nuclear mushroom cloud and burn our retinas to mush. Global warming will at least mean the wee guy with the taps aft in the canal with a bucky will have a good view of that pyroclastic cloud approaching. Probably get their dicks out and wave it in a Snapchat. Is nuclear annihilation preferable to Brexit? I don't know. At least there's a definitive outcome. Let us know your thoughts at Ungagged on the usual places. No on Snapchat. Don't send nudes. I mean, you will be nude after the radiation shreds your trackies. But at least you will have a nice tan.
Tied to the moon, won't let the sun Greetings. My name is Ola, and normally I do a music program called Ola's Cool Kitchen, but I do have an avid interest in politics, and I occasionally enjoy moonlighting and giving a political rant here on Ungagged. Now, I live in London, but I'm also a US citizen as well, and I've just been watching the dual disaster of Brexit and the absolute corruption of the Trump presidency unfold. Nearly 1 month away from leaving the EU, here in the UK, we're still gridlocked in complete uncertainty. And I'm worrying when I return to London, because right now I'm recording this in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Will I be able to afford fruit? Yeah, I'm not kidding here. Because, like, if we crash out of the EU with no deal, one of our biggest trading partners is the EU. And there's a serious concern that we might not have tons of fruit. You know, the shelves will be empty, right? All the cheap things I take for granted living in a wealthy Western country, will they be gone? I mean, this is a real concern. You know, people are talking about stockpiling food and medicine. This is going to be like Soviet Union style breadlines or wartime rationing here in the UK. This is how ill-prepared the UK is for Brexit. But there is a new plan to end the deadlock. Okay, MPs could vote for Theresa May's deal, and then it would be put to the people in a second referendum to confirm the decision or to stay in the EU. Okay, this is the best thing I've seen so far. The beauty of this plan is it will make leavers and remainers happy. For leavers, if the deal is confirmed, it offers a definitive end and Brexit is done. For remainers, it offers one last chance to make a case to stay in the EU without all the lies of the Leave campaign. You know, we've gone through this process and saw, hey, there will be even less money for the NHS, not more, etc., etc. All the crappy lies we got. So whether you voted leave or remain, Brexit is a complete mess. And we kind of want an end to this process. And this seems like a very fair plan. But this is just a plan, you know, on the table. It's not yet, they haven't made it into anything yet, so we're waiting on that. Now, I voted remain, but if we have a second vote and it's still leave, I can learn to respect that. I just want more opportunity to confirm the vote. So, fingers crossed, this plan is put forward, and if they do, and if you're for Remain, do not stay at home. Make sure you vote. So many Remain voters were lazy and just stayed at home. Now onto my Trump rant. I still have relatives and friends who are supporting Trump. And it's like, do these people only watch Fox News and nothing else? Or do they just not watch any news at all? You know, are you just like brain dead and completely dumb? Let's be clear, okay? Robert Mueller's team has indicted or gotten guilty pleas from 34 people, 3 companies, 26 Russian nationals, 3 Russian companies, and 1 California and 1 London-based lawyer. 7 of these people, including 5 of the former Trump advisors, have pled guilty, right? 5 former advisors to Trump have pled guilty for crimes. Wait, how many people were arrested in the Obama administration? Oh, yeah, none. Okay? There's so much corruption in this administration. Every day is just more crap upon crap. So I kind of want to just focus on the positive. Okay? Number 1, Nancy Pelosi keeping Trump in check. That is such a beautiful sight to see. The new Congress with more women than ever. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. Oh, by the way, right-wing douchebags, it's not loony. Climate change is real, and we need to find cleaner alternatives and solutions like yesterday. Okay? It just never ceases to amaze me how backward thinking and myopic people are. I mean, I've got one cousin that says, we'll just have to leave the planet. What? You know, this is a beautiful planet and we can keep it and live on it happily with just a bit of care and rethinking. Seriously. So I want to leave you with some inspiring words to finish. I watched Stacey Abrams' response to the State of the Union, Trump's State of the Union, which was delivered with grace, dignity, and real class. And the best part, Stacey did this after she watched a bunch of Doctor Who episodes. Now that's the way more political addresses should happen, right? Watch some Doctor Who episodes, be inspired. And if you have a chance and you haven't seen it, watch Stacey Abrams' speech. It is brilliant and inspiring. So if you enjoyed my rant, you might enjoy my radio show, Ola's Cool Kitchen. Good chance that's possible. You can connect to me on Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, Minds, Elo, Tumblr, or Pinterest, or you can hear my podcasts. I got oodles, and you can follow me on SoundCloud, MixCloud, Spreaker, iTunes, Podomatic, or Stitcher. Just search Ola's Cool Kitchen on any of those sites to communicate or listen to me. Thanks again to Ungagged for hosting my rant, and I'd like to leave you with this anti-Trump song from 2016, Demagogue by Franz Ferdinand.
Certainly Brexit never seems to end.
It's a gift that keeps on giving, yeah, as they say.
So, certainly, I suppose, we've had the coming up to the budget in Glasgow City Council. There's that in there, in your role as councillor. And if there's been any other developments in the other things that you've told about, the developments into the... It's not reparations for slavery, what's the term?
It's reparations.
Reparations.
So three minor issues to talk about. Yeah. So small ones to be getting on with. Okay, well, I'll start with the first one, which is Brexit's breakfast. And interestingly, I've been one of the campaigners for, alongside another Europe is Possible, for the left against Brexit position of calling for another referendum, a people's vote, from a left perspective, because we don't really think that the first Brexit referendum in the hands of the Remain Tories was exactly the way to convince people that staying in Europe was a good idea. So there needs to be a sort of left perspective, and that position has finally won out by influencing the Labour Party to finally jump to the next stage of its six-point plan to still confuse the hell out of us all. But it's good that Corbyn's finally moved, and I kind of got the hint that he was going to move that way when I heard Richard Bergen, who is about as Morning Star a guy you can get. He's one of Corbyn's front benches, and he's been resolutely opposed to a second referendum for as long as I can remember the debate. But he came out and subtly hinted that they were moving that way, and when you've got the Morning Star guy kind of going that way, you kind of knew they were going to do that.
Yes.
You could be cynical and say they're doing it because they fear losing further MPs to the Tigger group, but as I prefer to call it, the dinner party. You know, I'm thoroughly cynical about the dinner party. I don't think, although obviously in Parliament our MPs are working with that group now to try and get a majority for a second referendum vote. So obviously you sometimes will have the fellows that you don't want, but as I said, it was only interesting. I was watching the coverage we had of our fringe meeting. We had a fringe meeting on Left Against Brexit at the party conference in October, and it was interesting when I put that point about whether we should support a cross-party campaign, including, I named the parties, and the audience actually specifically said to me to remove the Lib Dems from the list and add Plaid into the list. So we were happy to work with everybody except the Lib Dems on campaigning for a people's vote. So pretty clearly now, the essence of the subject for us, though, if you support independence, having a people's vote on Europe is not getting in the way of the idea of independence. I mean, that was pretty clear. There's been a quite big shift amongst SNP members who kind of now realise that we have to deal with this business of Brexit first before we know the circumstances. Because we kind of know what the yes proposition would be in the referendum, but we don't know what the no proposition would be yet. And it's really not fair to ask people to vote again on that, given that they don't know what staying in the union means yet. And I think it's fair to allow people to have an understanding of what Brexit will be, to sort that out first before. So I'm personally very relaxed about the idea that Nicola hasn't called it yet. I long expected the thing to be called well before now, but how can you? You can't really make a decision given the absolute chaos. We may even still have a general election. It's looking more likely now that Theresa's caved in. So everything is possible. General election, another referendum, the extension of Article 50 looks very much more likely. And interestingly, I reread Lord Kerr's document from last June, and it's one of the scenarios that he predicts. He's very, very prescient. Yes. You know, so the official people's vote, that's one of the few sensible things they've actually said, but it's actually, he looks through the parliamentary rhetoric and the scenarios possible for it, and one of them is, you know, if Theresa May's vote deal is voted down and she loses her parliamentary majority, she may decide to go to the country to get her deal put in front of the people. I think she's likely to do that every day of the week before calling another referendum or resigning. So either she will go to the country on her deal, or some of her people vote to bring her down. And that was impossible last year. It's not so impossible now that some Tories may vote to bring down her government. Yeah. So everything is possible now that Labour's made that shift. Hopefully now the votes in Parliament and this week and next week and the other weeks to come will reflect the fact that Scotland's voted this way. We need our lock in place. So the SNP MPs are quite right to say we're not just going to unconditionally vote with you to bring about a second round referendum unless there is a double Scottish lock in there that, if we vote Remain again and England yet again votes Leave, it must trigger our right to have a referendum on independence. I'd want a gaslighting guarantee on that before agreeing. So they're quite right to not unconditionally vote for that. So those are the scenarios. Brexit's moving in an interesting direction, and by next week it'd be completely different again.
Yes, it's the way it's going, it changes from day to day sometimes.
So you also asked me about the council, and obviously that's kind of why you haven't seen me, because we've been kind of busy on the budget since about the beginning of November. And, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised by how comfortably we managed to get the S&P budget through in the end. Although, if you've watched the telecast of the webcast of the proceedings, 5 hours in that room is enough for anybody to not feel happy. So it was grueling, but not as grueling as in previous times. I mean, last year we had four budgets to read. This year we only had three because the Tories didn't bother to put one forward, and they sat on their hands and so they said, "Oh, we're going to vote against everything anyway, so we're not going to bother voting at all." That's basically what they decided to do. So they abdicated their responsibilities. But the Tories are always a gift that keeps on giving in the chamber when you've got people like Blockley and Thornton in there. They can be at moments presciently human, but others just ridiculous. So it was a typical performance from them. But interestingly, the shenanigans from Labour were exposed fully in the course of the published list of community facilities that were supposed to close. And of course, none of them have closed, were under threat of closing. And frankly, people have been misled into having campaigns to save their pool or save their community hall when they were never under threat of closure. And it's disgraceful that Labour councillors leaked lists of venues to the public and deliberately scaremongered people into thinking this was happening, raised a fake campaign about it, and they were thoroughly shamed up in the chamber because not one thing has closed, and there was no need for anything to have closed. There's no doubt that council budgets have suffered a bit because of austerity over the last 10 years, and there's no doubt about it that they've been unfairly treated in one respect, but... And I would go along with the idea that Glasgow doesn't get as much as it should do. Mm-hmm. That said, though, we're not powerless. You know, Glasgow and Edinburgh both spend £1 billion. You know, so within £1 billion, you've got some leeway to reinvest things, rejig things, decide how you will invest things differently. One example is, say, in homelessness services. If you can get people into housing first, straight away within a couple of weeks of them presenting, then that's literally thousands, indeed millions of pounds saved in bed and breakfast and emergency accommodation, which we're not having to spend. Yeah. So some of these so-called cuts that the unions have been referring to are actually efficiency savings from how we rejig and reinvest in services to make them more efficient. Now, I don't think it's socialist to want inefficient public services, which unnecessarily cost more, and I don't think it's socialist to tax working class people more when you don't have to. That's why we limited the rise to 3%, because it wasn't necessary. But frankly, the big elephant in the room, which we exposed to light, was the fact that £25 million of that budget was related to the payments for equal pay. Now, we came up with a very novel way of financing it, because essentially we mortgaged the big properties like the Emirates Arena, the concert hall, all the big ticket items that we've spent a lot of money over the years investing in. We've mortgaged those, they're staying in council ownership, but that allows us to raise capital so that we can pay what those women are rightly due. For 10, 12 years, many of them were told, talk to the hand or talk to the lawyers, the face ain't listening. The Labour administration, led by Frank McAveety and Gordon Matheson in turn, just didn't talk to them. Only when Susan Aitken came to power did the council take political responsibility and actually start negotiating with the unions. And within 20 months, we've sorted it as we promised in our manifesto. It's a bit ironic that we were the ones who got strikes and demonstrations outside city chambers when, for the 10 years in before that, no demonstrations, no strikes, in fact, because the unions themselves unfortunately ignored their own female members, unfortunately. They probably listened more to the male manual staff who were able to, obviously take the council out and close council services down. And they were obviously, when they signed the work and payments arrangement in 2006, they very much had those workforces in mind, and they neglected the women and the social care, and they just didn't treat them equally. Mm-hmm. And the argument I had from a lot of my colleagues, when you talk to them privately, that is the Labour councillors, they said, the unions agreed to it, so what could we say about it? How would we disagree? Yes. So, they came to an agreement. They know they got it wrong, but they're trying to spread the blame for it. It's one thing to make a mistake. It's another thing to let the mistake go on for 10 years, spend £2.5 million of taxpayers' money through legal fees and through staff fighting it in the courts to basically deny these women their rights. Well, we've sorted it out, but it's going to cost half a billion pounds. We're going to be paying for it over the next 20 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. But it's a justified thing. It's right that we do it. It's just right. It wouldn't be as much if we'd paid it at the time, but the reality is we've sorted it, and we've sorted it without doing any major damage to frontline services, mm-hmm. thank goodness, because we've actually had a little bit more money from the Scottish Government than we expected. So this year was always going to be the difficult year. Year two, when we knew that the financial point would be a bit more crunchy, we also knew there'd be more demands, and also the honeymoon period of us only just getting in would have worn off. But actually, we've successfully got our budget through, and as far as I'm concerned, we've defended frontline services. So I still am happy in the fact that I haven't had to vote for any major cuts to services, and I wouldn't, neither would my colleagues. So as far as I'm concerned, the way that the budget has been presented by some on the left is a bit disingenuous. They've not said all the things that we're doing to tackle holiday, tackle children's poverty in all the ways and forms that we're doing it. The £20 million we're going to spend on community hubs, which includes schools and the expansion of physical space to provide free school meals. Mm-hmm. Free school meals was one of the six core policies of the SSP in 2003. I know, because I was a member then, and I stood on that platform as a council candidate. So the fact that that's actually being implemented now by this council is a radical social measure which will create equality. I don't see how anybody can see that budget as anything other than progressive in the interests of the ordinary people of Glasgow. Plus, we're trying to reform the structure. Everybody says that the way that the city council structure has operated over decades has been very bureaucratic, top-down, and one of the things we're doing is we're making community empowerment a central element of what we're doing. We're devolving power to community budgeting, participatory budgeting, proper, serious power for working-class people in their community to decide how community facilities should be paid for and run. We're going to have more community transfers into community ownership during the course of the year. Mm-hmm. I'm quite sure that will happen more. So much more grassroots taking power away from this city chambers back to people in their communities, and no facility will close, no way.
that's good to hear. No, just hold on.
Me too.
For ages, to be mad. Right. So the topic I mentioned earlier that we've got left is the reparations.
Okay.
Is there any movement?
I'm part of, for those who don't know, I did a documentary which was broadcast in November, which talked about the relationship between Scotland, the Caribbean, and slavery in Africa. It's called Slavery, Scotland's Hidden Shame. It was presented by David Heyman, two-parter, and he went to West Africa and to the United States and to Jamaica. And I went with him to Jamaica in the second episode, and we discovered a lot of Scottish connections. What's happened since that programme, though, is that a lot more public engagement has happened, with very good feedback to the programme, around the question of reparations and what that actually means. So Glasgow and Edinburgh universities have both been talking about this. Glasgow published a report which talked about how Gilmore Hill campus was paid for, and where the money came from. Yeah. The people who were into cotton, sugar and tobacco trading were the people who donated to build it. So that was proved. So we also proved that the scholarships that were being paid for from those funds were still live and active now. So it's not even that it's a past historic question. Yes. This money still now is paying for Scottish students to study science and engineering, the Coates Prize, there's other bursaries. So the university decided, right, we will make an act of reparative justice by renaming the student learning hub the James McCoon Smith Building, which is the first African-American doctor in the world to qualify. Right. He graduated in 1837, became an abolitionist activist in the States, founded the New York City African-American public health system. So that's how he's known there. Right. Yes. So we've got the major big building they're building in the middle of Glasgow campus where all the students will be learning. That's going to be James McCoon Smith Building. So they've done that, but they've also agreed to have links with the University of West Indies and so on. So this been a little trickle that other institutions are following. So Edinburgh's academics have been starting the process of trying to do something there around a study centre. And I'm on a museum committee with the Coalition for Racial Equality and Rights. Mm-hmm. We're trying to convene a sort of Liverpool-style national museum here. Yeah. So we've got a committee set up. Myself and Councillor Laydham are on it. And we're working with African Caribbean community activists and scholars to bring... to have that discussion about what should be in such a place. It should be an empire, slavery, migration and colonialism, yeah, studies place. So moves afoot to sort of get a museum going, moves afoot to get the institutions to do it, moves afoot to rename the plaque in Edinburgh under the Lord Melville's statue, Henry Dundas. So there's Jeff Palmer and Edinburgh's working on that. So it's really quite time. I'm hoping that both Glasgow and Edinburgh City Councils will join the universities in making a move around reparative justice. We're still on the way, but we're sort of, I suppose, we're in the process of acknowledgement.
Yes.
There is greater acknowledgement and awareness that there's an issue about Scotland's connection to the Caribbean and to slavery. More and more history scholars are writing books about it. So there's more of a groundswell now, and that's a good thing, and the documentary sort of helped to push that out there.
Mm-hmm. Documentary was excellent. I watched both of them, and I don't know if it's still available on BBC iPlayer or something.
Sadly, it's not, but I'm hoping that the new channel, which we're going to talk about in a minute, will rebroadcast it. But yes, it's unfortunately only stayed up there for a month.
Oh dear. Because that's something I think every Scot should watch, definitely. Right, well, thank you very much for all of that. It was good to speak to you again.